Welcome to What's Wrong with Wolfie.
Greetings and welcome to What's Wrong with Wolfie, a retro podcast dedicated to the pop culture of the 80s, 90s and zeros. My name is Jason and this was not going to be the plan to kick us off returning to a regular schedule, but it's been a turbulent time in our personal lives with one thing or another hitting all at once, but I still managed to get a great interview recorded for you with Ben Baker joining us. He is a self-published author of many nostalgia-based books based on the 80s and 90s, with Ben's latest book, The Dreams We Had as Children, which released in December 2023, is all on CITV's history and Ben's personal top 40 shows. Ben was feeling slightly under the weather when he talked to me, and you may notice that during the interview, but Ben was determined to talk to us and we had already rescheduled a couple of times. You're about to hear us have a lovely little conversation on his books, Children's CITV, the state of modern TV, me grilling him on five shows he admitted from his list that should have been there, and his radio show Ben hosts on Noisebox Radio. But before we welcome Ben, I just wanted to remind you all of a few things. Firstly, we are a fan-supported show, and if you'd like to throw us a quid or two, then Ko-fi is the place to go. But if that's not right for you right now, then you can support us for free by giving us a five-star review or rating on your podcast platform of choice. I just want to thank everyone who has left us a review or rating, and also to the person who recently gave us a 5-star rating on Spotify. Really, really appreciate it. So thank you all very, very much. I also just like to mention our Discord, where you can come and be a part of a small community to discuss pretty much anything pop culture related, or just to share what's going on in your day. You can find links for our Ko-fi or Discord in the show notes or on our website at thewolfiepod.com. If you do visit the website, you might notice a couple of reviews by Matt Murray. He's reviewed Raku Venture and Hidden in Time 2 for us, and they are certainly worth checking out. Really grateful to Matt for writing these, and hopefully there will be more to come from him in the future. You'll also see a review for Electrician Simulator from my good self, so it'd be great if you could give that a look too. Now with all that out of the way, let's get on to the interview with Ben. I'm here with Ben Baker, author of his new book, The Dreams We Had as Children. Ben, welcome to the Wolfie Pod.
Hello. Finally glad to be here after several attempts and fails, mainly because my body has decided to just completely give up on me. I'm 43 now, that's it.
I know, right? As soon as you get past, everyone says that life begins at 40, but I mean, I didn't believe them.
I would say the mental wherewithal is better when you're in your 40s. It's just all the physical things that are attached. It's like, no.
No, I've had enough. Can't deal with it anymore.
Which is a lovely positive start for this interview. I apologise.
But I think like the majority of the listeners that are listening can probably relate quite well. So they're probably just sitting there or driving, just nodding their heads in agreement at us. So.
Rubbing creams into their ankles and thighs. Yeah. No, we totally get it. And we are you. You are us.
And I think thinking back of all the guests that we've had on the podcast, I think you're probably the most northern that we've had. So you can walk away with high praise with that.
Yeah, that's fair. I must admit, I've seen some of the guests you have, and I can't think of anyone more northern. Definitely no. But that's fine. I mean, the thing is, I'm in West Yorkshire, so where I am, I don't feel very Yorkshire. But then I speak to people, and they go, "Wow, you're very Yorkshire." So
I don't know. I mean, obviously, the first time I've spoken to you, like personally, so I'm kind of waiting to hear to see if we get some of the proper northern vocab from your good self. So
I've left my fettling whippet outside, but I'll give it a go to throw our mammoth fire. Let's see how we go.
Okay. All right. But I mean, the big reason that I got you here onto the podcast is, you know, you're an author. And you're
I thought you said orphan then for a second. I'm like, bloody hell, that's no way to break it to me. So I genuinely thought you said orphan for a second. I'm like, I am an orpheus.
Oh God, we're going to have problems here with like the Northern and the Essex dialect going on here.
No, it's just my ears, my old person's ears. That's all. I am not an orphan, and I am an orphan.
Yes, a self-published author, and you've just released a new book only last month in December, The Dreams That We Had as Children, a CITV book, and obviously I want to get into that a little bit later on in the interview. You know, I think it's quite important for the listeners just to know a little bit about yourself in general, really. You know, is it just books that you do?
In regards to how I spend my days, more doing podcasts and radio, really. I'm part of a station called Noisebox Radio, and I do two shows a week at the moment on there, which is quite a lot of work. And I've just started a new podcast, which I can't actually say what it is yet because it's not out yet. But with my friend John, we are doing a very ridiculous podcast. So suddenly I'm doing after doing all the writing, it's like, and then I stop that for a bit, and then it's now onto the audio cycle. And then I'll probably get bored of that in a couple of months, and I'll start thinking, oh, I might write a book again. You know, like,
it keeps it fresh.
Yeah, I'm trying to make this what, you know, my living. It's getting there. It's not there.
Yeah, definitely. This is what I think about podcasting. I love doing podcasting, but it's something I'd love to do as a full-time job, or, you know, at least a job that brought in some money. But, you know, it's a hobby, so, you know, and I'm happy with that. So
when was your first ever podcast out of interest?
Oh, God. It was a podcast that I used to do with one of my friends that I grew up with. 2015, maybe, around that time I did my first one.
See, the first time I put audio for download before the word podcast was used was 2002.
Wow.
I used to do sketch shows and stuff and put them up. And because of the times, it was like you could put them in as high quality as 128K, which was like, that'd be like 5 minutes download. You can have the 32K version, which genuinely we may have just recorded on potato peel and mud because it sounded that bloody awful. But again, you just sort of went with what the internet was, and we just progressed ever since.
Yeah.
And yeah, sort of like the word podcast sort of about 2005, I think people started using that one.
And yeah, back then, wasn't it?
There was a time where basically I had a podcast which would always get in the iTunes comedy top 10 because there wasn't that much stuff out there.
Yeah.
And the reason I sort of asked when you started is because, again, you even from 2015, you've seen like the explosion and all these people getting involved who wouldn't have gone near a podcast, wouldn't even heard of a podcast like 5 years before. It should be good, but it's frustrating.
I mean, it's great that we have this platform where anybody can just sit down and create something out of nothing, I guess, through the power of audio. That's a great thing, obviously. But you know, when it's so accessible now, and there's so much of it, it is just very hard on the discoverability side.
It is certainly when you're competing with star names who have production teams, you know, and star celebrity guests and stuff. I mean, you've had some cracking guests on this show. But I'm sorry to ruin that for you. But, you know, you've put the time in, you've put the effort in, you've committed to doing it. And I think certainly, like, I've done quite a few podcasts. I've done about 8 podcasts to promote this book. And I only pick things that just interested me because it's like, not that I was getting like Graham Norton or anything, but you know what I mean? It's like, there were certain shows like, no, that doesn't sound much fun. You know, it's like, and shows like yours, like, oh yeah, they get it. I think that's the important thing fully. It's like, I look for podcasts these days of people who, if they're not like super expert on something, that's fine, but they're passionate about it. I think passion is the most important thing with podcasting and radio.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. If you haven't got the passion, then it doesn't, it definitely shows through the stuff that you're putting out.
I think so.
But you mentioned there about Noisebox Radio, you know, quite intrigued about what you got, what you do on there, and like how you got involved with Noisebox.
Noisebox as it be 2 years old this March, and it basically started because I became friends with some people who were presenters on another station. They decided to try their own thing and asked me from the get-go, you know, do you fancy doing this? Because they'd heard my podcasts, which I've been doing for years on and off. So in that respect, it's great because it's like a community radio station, but the community is the world, you know, which can sound a bit wanky, I appreciate, but it's we've got someone from every corner of the UK, pretty much, just by sheer coincidence and chance and what have you. And yeah, again, like podcast, it's been hard to get the word out because there are so many radio stations now, and as is, anyone can start an internet radio station, but you know, we're doing it legit, you know, we pay as PRS and all that sort of stuff. So I'm not only do we, you know, play a lot of older music, which, you know, we go back up to the sort of 50s. I mean, it's predominantly 70s, 80s, 90s, really, is what we play on their sort of most days, with a bit of 2000s. But we play a lot of new stuff as well. We play not only sort of new songs by established artists, but new stuff as well. It's just we're always playing new music, and it's made us as you know, people of a certain age, take the time and take the effort to actually listen to new music and go, oh yeah, it didn't die in 1998 or yeah, you know, the thing. And it's a big market for grabbing people's attention, but we have some fantastic programs and some fantastic presenters, definitely. Like, genuinely, is the station I turn on in the morning. It's only partly ruined by having my voice in it, really. It's, you know, it's well, I've recorded most of the jingles and stuff like that. So you, if you tune in, you will hear this terrible voice a lot, although slightly less, hopefully, lurgy-filled.
You know, I've listened to some of these internet radios beforehand, and you know, they've been all right for a while, and then I kind of lose interest and move along with the day. But I did check out Noisebox, and I was pleasantly surprised with the kind of music that was being played. Okay. And the personalities of the DJs really came out quite nicely.
I'm glad you said that, definitely, because we have had people approach us and go, here's a demo, and it sounds fine, but they're just not really saying anything. There's no, like, I get it's passion. There's no passion in there. They're like going, hello, this is a program which could be on literally any local radio station ever. I mean, we're always looking for new presenters, which is a great thing. And I always say, like, what's your thing? Or as Lemmy says, what's your hang? Is basically, you know, what's your passion? What's your genre? What's your era sort of thing? And we'll work out a show from there, basically. I think, again, I'm going to keep coming back to it. It's like, if you are, like, we have a show called, wait for it, The Funk and Soul Show, which plays, yes, Funk and Soul. I love that show. But it's not a show I could put together. That's not something my obsession lies. I do the indie show. I play weird stuff, you know, and loud, noisy things. And I think that's it. If you have enough people who are doing what they love, I guess, is, yeah, it's an important thing, I would say. And I'm glad you've said the personality shine through, and I am just waffling now because I genuinely have drunk the Kool-Aid fully.
I don't know, like, you listen to commercial radio and, like, yeah, there are a couple of DJs that, you know, they stand out from the crowd. Yeah. But for the majority, you know, they're just a radio DJ doing radio DJ stuff. Whereas, you know, like you mentioned, you've got different people doing different things and they all got their own different thing. It just really shines through.
Oh, cheers. I appreciate that. As I say, it's sort of mostly music during the day. And then sort of the programme starts sort of 8 p.m. And we just sort of, again, it's like we have a fantastic 80s show which plays some stuff, you know, but quite a lot that you'd like you don't know. But again, in a kind of, oh, that's interesting. We have, what else have we got? Brilliant rock show. We've got a guy called Kia who basically plays If I say it's world music, your brain instantly goes to a very sort of Andy Kershaw kind of Bundu Boys kind of thing. But he basically plays music from anywhere in the world other than English-speaking countries. And it's brilliant. It's just fascinating. And again, that's his passion. He loves finding weird records from around the world and playing them. And I was like, it's not a show I could do. It was not a show I could do to an inch of the quality that Keir does it, for example. And so, yeah, I think the problem a lot with actual radio, certainly with local radio, with all of its cuts last year, sort of thing, the taking away choice, you know, replacing it with, I'm not saying nothing, but certainly least offensive porridge, I guess.
Yeah. The church. I mean, it's one of, I mean, I always used to listen to Heart, or when it used to be Essex FM, you know, the local radio station took over by Heart. I stopped listening after hearing Summer of 69 for the seventh time that day, and then the song from Dirty Dancing for the fourth time that day, and then Footloose and whatever else was on repeat.
Yeah, I can't do it anymore. I just, you know, I'll put Greatest Hits Radio on in the morning for Popmaster, and that's it. That's my limit. And he always plays, for some reason, I don't know why, but it seems that every other day he plays Walk of Life, either before or after, and I cannot bloody stand that record. But it's perfectly representative of, I suspect, most of the country are very happy with that. They're going, oh, yeah, I love to hear this. Me, I like a bit more of a mixture. I'm quite happy to hear obvious of them. We play, like, you know, loads of what you would call obvious acts and stuff like that. But you might hear some, like, we'll play Pet Shop Boys, we'll play ABBA, you know, we'll play Nirvana, we'll play all sorts and stuff, but it might not be necessarily West End Girls, Dancing Queen, or Smells Like Teen Spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll get a different single. Certainly like bands like Madness. I mean, we've often joked, because we sort of have things in sort of pre-80s, 80s, 90s, noughties, and sort of current. And there is possibility with some bands like Madness that they could come out for every era, you know, because they do have songs in all those times. It's like, it's not happened yet, but it could do.
Yeah, no, I like what you said there. You know, like you'll play the bands that people know, but you may not necessarily play that song that gets played all the time. You'll play something else from their library. It's just nice. It keeps it fresher. You know, you're not hearing the same song over and over again.
Well, I absolutely agree. The head of music, Steve Binney, he's on it, sort of thing. And it's, again, it is such a small thing. There is three of us, basically, sort of on top of everything. And presenters sort of chip in where they can, sort of thing. Because it's a volunteer thing, obviously. Mm. And, you know, you have to have people want to do it. So you have to sort of not be a knob, I think is.
Yeah. I guess that helps, I guess, that, you know, it is voluntary. So, you know, it keeps the knobs away, maybe.
No comment. No, he does. Honestly, the team we've got currently, we've had a few, one or two have not fit in, but generally everyone else has, totally, just got it.
Yeah.
My tagline for it and for the radio station always been, it's pop music for adults, but not necessarily grown-ups, as I think there's an important distinction there. Pop kids who became pop adults, basically, you know, like, why, because I'm 43, should I stop listening to pop music?
Exactly. Your show in particular, before we move on to your books, like, what would people expect to hear from your show on Noisebox?
Well, I'm doing two at the moment, because I'm an idiot. So on Tuesdays, 8 p.m, I do middle-aged teenage angst, which again is playing very much into that, you know, why should teenage kicks be only for teenagers? We want to get up and dance to indie and alternative songs. Just let's have a sit down every like 10 minutes or so, we'll be fine. And yeah, I'm kind of playing old and new indie and alternative stuff. It's, you know, it's not rocket surgery, but I enjoy it. That's where my passion lies. And the other one is Sundays, 7 till 9. It's a live show I do called Songs of Reappraise. And basically, I'm playing songs that you just wouldn't hear anywhere else, or you'd probably not hear on many radio stations. I mean, I played the Jim Bowen Rap last week, an actual single which came out in 1991 by Jim Bowen.
No stuff. Way.
But yeah.
That's
but
brilliant.
It's not all novelties. It's like I try to play songs that are really good that you just don't hear. You know, for example, like Queen on the radio, you're going to hear three songs. It's nearly always Don't Stop Me Now. You might get Bohemian Rhapsody. You know, you might get We Are the Champions. You know, there's not a lot of range. You'd not get Now I'm Here or Body Language. That sort of thing. It's like there's a lot of room to play in that terms. And yeah, I have fun sort of throwing things at people and going like, and they're going, what is this? What is this? And then the next one, I'm like, oh, this is brilliant. I haven't heard this radio. So it's kind of like spinning those plates between absolute nonsense and absolute brilliance, I guess.
Yeah, quite gutted. I missed the Jim Bowen Rap, actually, to be honest.
Well, you know, it is on Mixcloud, mixcloud.com/noiseboxradio. You can hear that again. I mean, last week I also had it's the theme to The Greatest American Hero. Don't know if you remember that. A bit of Blondie, bit of, like Chris Rea's good song, Auberge. You know, you don't hear that anywhere. Tasman Archer covering Elvis Costello, The Scaffold. Julian Clary covering Wandering Star, which genuinely quite beautiful. You wouldn't expect it, but yeah. So it's kind of where my passions lie. Yeah, that's kind of the general gist of that. So if people want to listen, they can get involved. As I said, they can come join the Noisebox Discord and chat along and rate some of the songs and all that. And yeah, got a little guest chart every week from this week in chart history of all flops which didn't make it in, and people can choose which one they wish to hold aloft, like the lost trophy is. Or is that just bollocks?
That sounds great. And yeah, people could go to noisebox.com to get that.
Noisebox.radio.com, yeah.
Okay, well, let's leave the radio station there and let's
It's
get...
gone. It's in the far distance. I'm waving it goodbye.
Goodbye, Noisebox. See you later.
I've left it 50 pence for me.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about your writing, because that's what you're here for. That's what I got you here for.
Because I'm an author, yes, we've established, yes.
before we get into the books, like, well, what inspired you to write in the first place?
For all my entire life, I've always been like, if there's a scrap of paper as a kid, I'd be scribbling stuff down, you know, just writing. I've often said this, if I could swap writing for being a good artist, I would have done, because art, you know, I'm a big fan of comic books and stuff like that, so I would have loved to have been a good artist, but I am not. And the thing is, I've tried to write sort of not serious books, but certainly books with less of a voice, and I found that there was less interest in those. And so books like the one I've just brought out, and several sort of Christmas themed ones I did, I've tried to write as me, as just a bloke. You know, I'm a 43-year-old bloke, and I'm just remembering some of this stuff. I'm revisiting some of this stuff and sort of working out my own path through, I guess. I think in terms of writing and, like, why I write is just to get out of my head, I think. Sometimes it's like if something's itching you, you just go write it down.
I say that to my wife, you know, when she starts stressing about all the stuff we've got to do in the house, I say, just write a list. Just write it out of your brain onto a piece of paper. And she always feels better for it afterwards.
Yeah, well, there's two reasons for that. One is, like, proactive things are always... they're so hard to see when you're doing a proactive thing. Also, to celebrate yourself and go, I did a good thing there. Two, it's just distraction. You know, it really is. When you focus in on one thing, you're not focusing on another, which is sometimes how I write can be a bit sort of monomaniacal, really, when it comes to, it's just that, it's all that. This last book in particular was like 3 months of Whirling Dervish, which, not healthy. I'm quite happy to admit that now, but
yeah,
that's the problem with having an idea for a book in September and thinking, oh, that'd tie in really well with the anniversary in the start of January. Guess I better write it then.
So the book that you released in December, you started writing in September of 23?
Yeah.
Wow. That's an impressive turnaround.
Yeah, I know, it's insane. It's insane. Luckily or unluckily at the moment, I am single, so it wasn't upsetting anybody's life too much.
Sure.
But yeah, I just kind of went mad, a little bit mad, a little bit mad. I made a huge list of all the things I wanted to cover, because it's about children's ITV and specifically my love of children's ITV in the 80s and 90s, but giving it context before and after sort of thing. So it's not, if I'd written like a very detailed history, it would have taken forever and it wouldn't have been that interesting, I don't think, for me to go through broadcasting from 1964 sort of thing. It's like people want the hits a little bit, and also like something on children's television, going over serious with that sort of thing, it's deathly. You can't. You've got to have fun with it. You've got to try and match the joy and sort of interest of the thing you're talking about, which, you know, children's ITV was definitely for me.
Your newest released book, The Dreams We Had as Children, a book that you wrote in 3 months, apparently.
And I did. So I made the list, and then I found as much as I could, and then I watched as much as I could and made notes, and then tried to make those into actual 40 sort of decent mini essays.
I mean, that is pretty impressive, dude. I must say, because I mean, I have had a flick through the book. I've read probably about half of it, you know, and it's come across as a nice read. You know, it doesn't feel rushed or anything. And like, I learned a couple of bits, especially about how CITV came to be and all the history behind the start of all that kind of stuff. So you did well, dude.
You know what? When I say it out loud, when I say it took, you know, as long as it did, I stopped because there was a deadline with this one. I could have written and written and written and added more programs. And indeed, since sort of publishing the book, I have found a few shows. I'm like, damn, wish I'd put that in. I wish I'd remembered that. But I also have to go, this isn't an exhaustive thing. This is a personal sort of book. And like before this, I've written a few Christmas TV books, general one, and then an 80s one and a 90s one. And the only way I could really do those is because there's a story there, really, you know, which is the story of those decades. You know, in terms of like the 80s is not quite the boom. You know, we've sort of had the boom in the 70s of most watched telly, but it's still a huge decade for stuff on telly, you know. You know, programs like Only Fools and Horses suddenly becoming massive, and the sort of the big film, how the films kind of moved on, you know, and became more recent and all that sort of stuff. And then the 90s, the story there is the sort of ending of all that, really. It's, you know, rise of satellite TV and then digital and the internet and stuff, and it's kind of like the last gasp of, you know, there being some sort of, I won't say quality control, I won't say that. It implies that television is rubbish now, and I'm not the sort of person who, even with the children's ITV book, I've got a recent thing, a recent show inspired it, and it's like, I'm not the sort of person who's like going, no, all old things are rubbish. But, you know, I can see there's less joy. I think I'm going back to that word, joy. There's less joy on television. There's nothing really much that gives you that excitement. And that's why I think like Gladiators has done so well. The Return of Gladiators, which I don't know if you've been watching it.
I have.
I genuinely think it's great. I think because it's the same as the original.
But pretty much. And like,
or as enough as.
Well, yeah. I didn't know what to expect when we sat down to watch episode one. And as soon as the titles came up and the music kicked in and then it went to the arena, I was immediately transported like 20 years back in time to when I watched it in the 90s. And it was amazing, not only because it felt like that to me, but also because I was watching it with my children. Mm-hmm. And something I thought I would never happen that I would be sitting down on a Saturday night at 6 o'clock watching brand new Gladiators with my children.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But again, it comes back to joy. It comes back to there is so little that you would sit and watch with your kids these days in that sort of scenario, you know. Or like children's ITV, again, the shows that my parents would sit there and watch or like pretend they weren't watching but seriously be sort of sat on the corner of the sofa and that. I just think those are more few and far between now. And it's a shame. Every Christmas comes along and we go, right, what's available? All the stuff that does really well is light entertainment because that's what people want. They want Strictly and Doctor Who and The Wheel or whatever. Yeah, maybe less. Maybe less that one.
It's true with, like, when you think about CITV and CBBC back in our day, because we had that time period where it was just for us. We knew we was going to have a couple of, you know, it was a nice thing to look forward to get out of, get through your school day, to know that.
That's you're absolutely back on, yeah. A sort of, this is our time. This is our, like, hour and a bit of telly. You know, we claim this.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, like 4 till 5:30. So one of the things that came up with doing this as well is that people are going, yeah, but the kids don't want that. And like the CITV channel ended in September, which was the big impetus for me writing this. They were like, oh, people don't want it. It's like, I get it. I 100% understand that things have changed.
Yeah.
But I just feel there's something missing with that. I feel people aren't allowed to discover stuff anymore in the same way. You know, like flipping around, what's this?
Mm.
As opposed to going around Netflix 15 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
And going, oh, maybe that. What's that? You know, you don't get that sort of stumbling on things. That's what I think a lot of children's television is so beloved because of that. I don't know if you necessarily would make an appointment for certain programs, but you'd come home and you'd immediately put the telly on and it'd be like, right, what is it? Entertain me.
You know, choice is a good thing to have, but I mean, I think we've got too much choice now that it does make it impossible to make a choice on what to watch sometimes. And it was nice back then to say, like, well, this is on, this is what you've got to choose from. You've got this or CBBC, and that's it.
And out of interest, I assume you flip between the two, you know, for the best program,
mm-hmm.
which is correct, which is the correct thing to do. But I've heard people go, nope, we weren't allowed ITV on, or, you know, whatever. It's odd, actually.
It's true, because my wife was a CBBC watcher. Her parents wouldn't let her watch CITV because they didn't want her to see the adverts to around and go, I want this and I want that and this and the other.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I never thought about that, because, I mean, the reason why particularly sort of 85 to sort of 93 so sort of verdant with program making and stuff, with all these things that are sort of being tried out and slightly riskier and animation and all that, is because the money's coming in through the animation, through the adverts, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have some programs like He-Man, which literally are adverts for the toy sort of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I get that, but it's sort of a trade-off in those respects. You know, you really did have to go, yeah, there's some adverts here, but it's paying for, you know, this series of whatever, you know, Nightmare or Danger Mouse.
What struck me the most when I was reading your book was that, like, I don't know, like, growing up myself, when looking back at this time period with the kids' programs and CBBC and ITV, and, like, for some reason, I always held that little bit more fondness for CBBC over ITV for some reason. And, like, the only thing I could think of that for that reason was probably the broom cupboard. And, like, they seem to have this.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, they got that right. Because children's ITV had hosts before BBC when it started in 1983. They did have Envision hosts, but they were all pre-recorded. And, you know, the beauty about the broom cupboard is they were reacting live to stuff and kind of like a pal, almost familiar face.
like I say, when I read in your book, like, and how much I watched on CITV, and it kind of reminded me of that. And I was like, oh, do you know what? In fact, I probably watched more CITV, and I probably enjoyed more of the programmes from CITV than I did from BBC.
I'll tell you something which has happened in the sort of aftermath of this book, is that people said, well, why isn't so-and-so in there? Someone said, why isn't the Animals of Farthing Wood or Demon Headmaster in there? And I said, because they weren't on ITV. You know, I think people, as a kid, you sort of mush it all into one, you know. And that's fair enough. You don't really think, oh, I must watch the BBC One immediately. You know, yeah. You just watch whatever's wherever. So I think you probably do have to look back like you did and go, Oh, yeah. It was more of a spread than I realised.
Mm. Even the cartoons, you know, obviously Danger Mouse, Count Dracula, obviously some of the more famous cartoons that CITV
showed. Yeah, from Cosgrove Hall, yeah. And that was a beautiful thing, is because Cosgrove Hall was the animation department of Thames Television. And back then, of course, TV was in regions. And so you had a lot of regions making stuff and sort of competing for getting in there, which I think, you know, now we've got ITV PLC, you know, it's just drab. It's all the same. It's very formatted television these days. There's no chance of anything possibly exciting happening, you know, in the same way as, I'm going to say Noel's House Party. I was going to say Noel's House Party, and I thought, no, I don't want to be a Noel apologist. But, you know, this certain type of live program. Because, you know, he did murder a man. That is a thing that happened. He did not personally, but he was heavily involved with the death of a person. But, again, that wouldn't happen on Michael McIntyre's Big Show.
No.
Or The Masked Singer, because they're pre-recorded.
Yeah.
The problem, more than anything, is that this stuff isn't out there to watch again, to reinvestigate. You know, it's on YouTube, some of it in like pants quality, you know. Mm-hmm. And stuff like, you know, Danger Mouse has got full DVD releases and Trapdoor and all that sort of stuff. But there's loads of other stuff which hasn't, like Round the Bend and Gilbert's Fridge, Nightmare. Palace Hill, you know, that sort of thing. It's like, it's sad that ITV don't seem to appreciate what they had. I might just be going depressing again.
Well, it's hard, isn't it? I think if it wasn't for YouTube, then I think maybe things might have stayed the same. Because,
do you think?
With my two children, they, you know, when they were little toddlers, you know, we watched CBeebies.
Yeah.
And they enjoyed that. But when they got to a certain age and they discovered YouTube, that was it. They would rather watch the random stuff that they could find on YouTube and not watch, you know, as in air quotes, the TV that I would watch when I was their
age. Totally. I mean, I was going out with someone with kids for quite a long time, and I saw that pattern also happen, sort of moving away from CBBC to... God, what were they called? People playing Minecraft, mm-hmm. or doing silly Dude Perfect. That was it. I don't know if they're still a thing, but they were like, you know, oh, we're going to do this big prank or this big experiment sort of thing. And I get it. I do. Mm-hmm. I think having what you want when you want is a very exciting prospect, and it's certainly what I wanted as a kid. I wanted more options. You know, when I was younger, we got Sky really early on. Well, we got Sky in August 1990.
Wow, that is early.
Quite early for some, not if you're in Europe or what have you, but because a guy, we had a business, someone came into business with a receiver and a dish and said, do you want to buy this for 100 quid? And my dad went, yeah, right then, because you only did subscribe for films then.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just, whatever. And it was like, children's channel, brilliant. I can't wait to watch this. And it ended at 10 a.m. every morning because it was all that transponder sharing crap.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, now it's women's lifestyle program. Great. Well, I enjoyed that 3 hours of, and it's like, I want more. So I totally understand the demand for more. I just feel there's no sadness in having some options there, sort of thing, you know, having live television options. And I think rather than, as they're going to do, you know, CITV have done it and CBBC are going to do it, which is push everything onto digital. And I think that'll, I don't think that'll be a good move for them. I think part of what keeps people watching telly is because they still have people saying, send in your drawings, you know, send us this, send us that. You're a hack of the dog, you know, lots of daftness and all that sort of stuff. And it's comforting. It's, again, it's back to the broom cupboard. But I appreciate that that's not where people in charge of television stations want television. I feel people who run television stations actively want them to fail. It's a bit stronger than intended, but I'll give you an example that I can think of and tell me to shut up at any point, obviously. But Ghosts. Do you watch Ghosts? The sitcom Ghosts? Just finished, obviously, on BBC One. Do you watch that?
I don't, actually. Just to help
you're aware of it, though. You know. You're aware
of it. Yeah, I know of it, yeah.
Which means it's done its job, basically. It's been a successful sitcom. You know, people watch it, people are interested in it, and they announce the final series of it, and it's going to start on this day, and it's going to be a brilliant, you know, a sitcom, because there's not a lot of them about these days at all. This last series is going to be a bit more emotional, a bit more dramatic, a bit more, you know, just something you want to watch, like water cooler moment kind of thing, in a similar way. And so the day it started on BBC One came, and before even second of it had been on broadcast television, it was all on iPlayer. And I just thought, why? At least get the, you know, normally they go, watch the first episode, then they'll put the series on. And even that's a bit tacky. It's like The Traitors, like they're doing that with The Traitors. And so people are in different places of where they're watching, and it's like, what are you doing? Well, this is sort of, you've got these good programs that people want to talk about and enjoy, and you're kind of going, yeah, but enjoy them at different times.
Yeah.
And yeah, I find it all weird.
You miss that going into work the next day and go, oh, did you see The Traitors last night? It was amazing, wasn't it? And you go, oh no, I've watched them all now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, oh, don't say I've not watched. You know, it's impossible, really. And I feel there's a place for that. And I appreciate I've gone way off the topic. But I think there's a place for that. But I think people want live television. They want live light entertainment. They want sitcoms. They want variety, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, I think that's where YouTubers come in. And Twitch. I watch a lot of Twitch, which for a 43-year-old man, it's probably seem odd, but a lot of the people I watch don't necessarily do video games. You know, there's some people who'd like tech people as tech things apart and show you how we do it. Some are animators. You know, do you remember Badger, Badger, Badger? That cartoon from like 20 years ago and Weeble and Bob and stuff. Well, that guy has his own channel. You can watch him animate live. I'm like, that's brilliant. But it's an option. It's a secondary option of something. And I like it because being on my own and working from home, sometimes it's nice to know there's another live human being.
Yeah.
You know, around. That's where kids' TV really thrived because let's say with CITV, you got an hour and 15 minutes, and in that, there'd be a preschool program, there'd be a cartoon, there'd be a sort of a serial, maybe, or a game show, or something like How To, you know, showing you how to make things and do stuff. And it fit a lot in. And you had people sort of hosting along with them eventually. Like Live Links came in 87 for children's ITV, but they struggled to find the right sort of people really for fronting it. And I think they did really well with Gene Downs and Scally the dog in the late 80s. But that's a very weird thing. Basically, Central Television lost the license to make children's ITV, so an independent contractor came in and did all that. And then they lost the contract again, and they brought Tommy Boyd in. Safe, dependable Tommy Boyd, but not interesting. Not exciting. Not when you've got, you know, Ed the Duck on the other side, who He's a bastard. I will fully admit he's a bastard, but irritating sod. But it were distracting.
What I found funny, like where I was saying about my children just watch YouTube, was that when we go away, like we stay at a caravan, and we don't have, you just have Freeview.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'll still want to watch telly. So they will watch the BBC, and they used to watch the ITV, and they would actually enjoy it. And I'll say, well, do you know what? You can watch that at home if you want to. But every time we come home, it is back to normal.
Yeah.
But I will give my youngest credit now. He has discovered Spider-Man cartoons on Disney Plus, and he's now onto the Justice League.
Okay, I've not watched the Justice League ones, but I do like it. I do love the 90s superhero stuff, X-Men and all that.
So it's been quite nice to see him watch, you know, in air quotes again, like normal children's telly.
Linear, I believe, is the phrase, linear, in that respect. But yeah, I don't think kids should have to live by the ways that. Since again, it's a tightrope being going like things were good at this point, but I don't want to be the sort of person to tell people younger than me how to live their lives just because I had this thing, this service.
Yeah, you kind of want them to experience the same kind of experience and magic that you did at their age, but you can't force it onto them.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where it is, but it's not on you. I don't find it on YouTube very much. I don't think YouTube is necessarily where. YouTube is not going to be a replacement for children's television.
No, it's quite funny going into the front room sometimes and just seeing the absolute rubbish that they're watching. Like he'll be quite happy watching some person that's got two cuddly toys and are acting out a scene with those two cuddly toys in their bedroom or something. You know, it might be very good actually, you know, but it's just, when you walk in and just see that, you go, why aren't you watching Danger Mouse or something, you know?
I mean, I sort of see the love in something that's just yours, a show that you found, which is yours, which a lot of the programs in my book sort of were, you know, because you didn't know who was watching them necessarily other than kids in your school. You know, you didn't know how big things were. So if you find a video like that and you think, oh, there's only a couple of thousand watch this, you know, this is my thing. Totally get that. This stuff is great, but it doesn't replace proper produced television for adults or children or families or whatever. You know, I think the Gladiators thing has proved that. 8 million it got last week.
Yeah, yeah,
it was good. When we were kids, was note. That wouldn't get you in the top 20 programs.
No,
but 14, now is
15 million, yeah, in our day.
But now is extremely good. And that's gone up from week one.
Mm.
And I just think it proves if you give people something live that not only can they live tweet along with if they want, which I do enjoy, like with Top of the Pops repeats and stuff, it's fun to tweet along with those, taking the piss or in enjoying it sort of thing. Or with the people you're in the room with. Just like, I've watched the last two, I've gone round to my friend's house the last 2 weeks to watch it, and we're like kids again. We're just like, whoa, yeah, you know, like. And we ended up watching Michael McIntyre after it, and I'm not a big fan of Michael McIntyre. I don't hate him, I don't like him, but he's there, sort of thing. But because it was on after, and it was more like entertainment, it was more light, you know, just like, oh yeah, all right. We ended up watching that.
In your CITV book, you obviously do a top 40 of your personal like favorite programs, from CITV,
which is
through
very
the
important thing to underline, because there have been some reviews going although there's one review I got for it on Amazon, he just said, well, I ain't heard of most of them, but he seemed to enjoy himself, so fair enough. Like, well, he's called CITV and me.
You know, that's interesting. There's programs in there I couldn't remember, or if I watched or whatever, and it was good to read about those. But I mean, there were some omissions from your top 40 that probably would have been in mine. Okay, and so I've listed five of these programs, and I just wondered your reasons on
Call
why they didn't make your top 40.
Get my lawyer on standby. This is going to be libel. This is going to be slander. Sorry, carry on.
Okay.
I don't have a lawyer.
There's no legal action going to be taken against you through this.
Good luck.
Just going to send some people round in case I'm not happy with your reasons.
Yeah, that's fair enough. My kneecaps are on standby.
So the first program that I didn't notice in your top 40 was Funhouse. Why?
Because it probably would be in my top 40 programs. There's not a lot to write about. It's the same thing every week, basically. It's the same format, which is why it was so good, you know, to be fair. But, I mean, it was the same every week for a decade, you know. And I'm like, I can't find anything to really say about this. But I fully concede, if this wasn't me having to find something to write about them, it would have been in there.
Okay. All right, I'll let you off on that one.
Thanks.
You're welcome. The second one is Button Moon.
Button Moon, I wasn't sure if it really came as a children's ITV program because it's before 1983 Button Moon started. The majority of it is on pre-children's ITV, and it was never shown in the afternoons,
as far as I could tell.
Lunchtime, you'll have watched it at lunchtime, 12:10. That was like the go-to thing, but that didn't always like coincide with what children's ITV had on. And then later on, basically, you know, they repeated what was on in the morning and in the afternoon. But I'm fairly sure I looked into Button Moon and it didn't qualify enough for me. And as I had a big old long list anyway, I think I was probably looking for some things to sort of let out of the list. But I will maintain that is one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever, that theme tune, and genuinely emotive in a way it really shouldn't be for a program about some reused washing up bottles and spoons.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that music in a long time.
I'm not singing it.
Damn it!
Not
with the croaky throat. You need to rest it. Got radio shows today. The next program is probably the same answer that you gave me for Funhouse then, and that's Finders Keepers.
Yeah, pretty much. I liked Finders Keepers more than Funhouse. Something more exciting about that kind of like almost, you know, going through the drawers and stuff, doing all the stuff you can't do at home, you know, sort of digging through your mum's pants drawer and, you know, finding a clue, which is not what you'd find probably at home in there. And yeah, I think there's more excitement from that. But again, the same sort of thing every week. It did change slightly. They brought Jet in, obviously. We've been talking about Gladiators. They did bring Diane Newdale in as a needless co-host later on in its run. But other than that, I think it's pretty same.
Two more programmes that I've chosen. And the first of those is Super Gran.
Super Gran, yeah, was not really a children's ITV thing because it was a Sunday afternoon programme.
See, I can't remember these things when they were on. I just remember watching them on ITV.
Well, that's it, because I had to go back and sort of... I think that's been an issue with some people. Go, what about this? It's like, I don't think it went out under the CITV banner, basically, on because it was a Sunday afternoon programme. I love that. And another cracking theme tune, which Noisebox does have on the server. So that will come out occasionally if you listen to Noisebox. Nice. There's quite a few Billy Connolly songs on there, actually. But yeah, sometimes Supergran comes out and he just grin like an idiot. But Jenny McDade, who wrote Supergran, went on to do Mr. Majika, who is in the book. And that was a children's ITV thing, even though that jumped around. And it's probably much less remembered, but it's a cracking little series. Well worth if you remember Supergran, that kind of like gentle anarchy sort of thing, you know.
Yeah,
that's what Mr. Majika is too.
And I was always surprised, like the lady who played Supergran,
Gudrun Earl.
That's it.
I don't know how you pronounce it, but
yeah, something like that. I mean, she was still alive until quite recently.
I think she still is, isn't she?
Is she? I don't see, and that amazed me. I was like, well, that's either really good makeup in the program, or she just looked really old when she was young.
Well, there is that. I mean, Gudrun Earl is still with us. She's she's born in 1926. So she was 59 when she started it. But so is Stanley Baxter, who played Mr. Majika. He's still with us, thankfully. Wow. He is you know, I think we've celebrated him a little bit, but not nearly enough. He's 97 now.
Wow.
Stanley Baxter. And honestly, he needs parades in the street. He's such a great comedy actor. Go on then, bring your final one on. I feel like a politician. I've battered them all off so far.
You have. You've been very smooth about it. Okay, well, this program was one of my all-time favourites. Like, I mean, you're probably going to tell me this probably wasn't on CITV or something, but from my memory, this was on CITV during the week after school, and it was one of my favourite programmes, and it's one that always sticks in my brain, and I was slightly disappointed not to see it in your top 40, and that was Woof.
Now there you've got me. Now there, Woof was in the long list. It was in the top 40 for a long time, and it just got pushed out a little bit because again, there's not a lot to say about it really. But I watched series one again. I thought this is brilliant, and series one went out on Saturday afternoons, but it did eventually become sort of a weekday children's ITV thing. Yeah, did you know wrote it? I mean, the early series of it.
No.
The writers called Fagan and Norris, and they'd done this sitcom called Chance in a Million, which is basically about the most unlucky man in the world. And then at the same time as they're doing Woof, they're writing The British Empire,
which is
so completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's baffling. So, yes, Woof should have been in there. Probably should have been in there, but then what comes out? I'll just be writing... And then he turns into a dog, and then he's got no clothes on, and then he gets some clothes, and he's a dog again. It's, you know, and the dog was called Pippin. We all remember that. But yeah, you've got me there. Hoisted, you have.
Gotcha. Yes. I mean, it was good. And that's like a great example. Like even just Woof and Supergran of just some of the like quality original programming for children that we used to get. That unfortunately probably won't be made now. And I think that is echoed by Paul Rose, Mr. Biffo, who did a lot of like writing for children's TV, and he doesn't do that anymore.
I think he does a little bit, but not as much as he used to, certainly with like 4 o'clock club and he's done all sorts. I know he's done all sorts of kids' shows. I know 4 o'clock club was his main one with Doc Brown. I think he's proved more than anyone that even with the best talent in the world, if the money's not there, it's going to be impossible. And I mean, I feel you had, you know, things ebb and flow. And I think probably Children's BBC did stagnate for a little bit. And then Steve Ride, who had been, you remember when Children's ITV went voice over only, they got rid of all the presenters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was him.
Okay.
And he was in... Your mother won't like it, and Palace Hill and stuff. Well, he became a big wig at the CBBC channel, and he brought in Ed Petrie and Oucho the Cactus as hosts. And have you ever seen any of this?
No.
Oh, you've got so much to enjoy. Basically, Oucho doesn't speak English. He speaks Cactinian, and only Ed can understand him. And he's a very angry cactus. And he's regularly calling Ed an idiot and belittling him live on air. And it's just, they make this whole world around them. And the programmes got better. They did, there's Raven, the sort of games, well, that had been before, but it was like, what else was there? There was the Legend of Dick and Dom eventually. And there was a programme called, basically playing old TV clips. Shaft, was it called Shaft? Yeah, something like that. And then they had the Slammer, which was the sort of like Ted Robbins as a governor of a light entertainment jail, and people did acts to try to get parole and stuff. And it got a lot more fun. And I think they've kept as much as they can of that, but the budgets have been slashed constantly.
Mm.
You know, and they haven't. There must be commercial things to back up. I mean, like CBeebies is a gold mine, but that's because they make fantastic programs. I think we're coming back to that thing. I think BBC don't understand what they have in both archive and current programming for children.
Yeah,
you know, and I genuinely think it's a really daft thing, and people have said this for years. You know, people have always had these fantasy things about, oh, if they just had a CITV streaming service playing old stuff. And, you know, part of what I've learned in this book is that there are companies, the one in particular, TVS, went under. It lost its franchise, and so it got bought up in bits, and all those programs now, through a bizarre array of events, now owned by Disney. And I can't see Disney Plus rushing to put old episodes of All Clued Up on Disney Plus. Or, I mean, stuff like Mr. Majika and that. You know, they won't know what they own, yeah. Really, I suspect. Yeah. So it would be lovely to have an Archive Kids TV channel. And I think it'd do all right.
Yeah.
As I learned with this book, there are so many eras. There are so many eras of kids TV. And everyone thinks every other era was rubbish. You know, but not as good as mine anyway, you know, sort of thing. And for me, I would say the golden period, definitely, sort of between 88 and 91. I think they had a lot of money. They had a lot of creative, interesting programs. And they were probably making a fortune as well. I say it's when the money's not coming in, you know.
Well, before you go, Ben, I just wanted to just check with you. You know, what's next for you? Have you got an idea for another book, or is that it for now?
I am going to have a long sleep. No, I do have an idea for a book, and it's currently in the research process, which basically means not doing it in 3 bloody months. You know,
yeah,
it's a lot of going through the British newspaper archive and stuff. It might be something, it might not, but I'm generally better with a project on the go. Mm. And I've got the 2 radio programs and the podcast, yeah. Which I wish I could tell you what it is. It's nobody should do a podcast on this subject.
Okay. Well, that was very intriguing. So I'll definitely have to make sure everyone knows about it. Once it's launched,
we'll come back on, me and my co-host, because okay. It fits very much in your world.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to it then. Cool. Well, before you go, Ben, can you just tell everybody where they can go to find your books and go and listen to you and whatever else?
Just Bushes, look for them in there. Generally, it's like tattered old copies might be in there. No, you can go to Linktree, which is linktr.ee/BenBakerBooks. And that's got links to my books on Lulu for Kindle. All my stuff is on there. And there's links to Noisebox Radio. You can find Blue Sky on there. And I've got a Patreon should people want to have out to do with that as well. So, all the links are there. So just look for Ben Baker, the internet, Wood Lane, NW1. So,
good memory there, dude. But yeah, easy peasy. Yeah, to get to his link tree to find all his stuff. But Ben, thank you so much for joining me. It was a great conversation and a pleasure having you here, mate.
I look forward to you to edit it to 20 minutes of things that are basically not just me ranting against the modern world.
I might leave it all in, you know. Just 2 middle-aged old men ranting about shit, you know.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's a cloud. I'm going to rant it.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's been a pleasure, dude. Yeah, I look forward to experiencing the stuff that you are producing. Sounds a very weird and dodgy sentence, but
that covers it. Yeah, weird and dodgy.
That pretty much covers it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Listeners, as always, thank you for your company, and we will hopefully see you again in a couple of weeks' time. So you all take care out there. Bye bye.
Ciao.
Wolfie, you can hear him barking.